go, the hardcore group, huh?
Ready to go.
Yes, sir.
All right. What do we got here?
Look up last week in the game and see Ninkovic playing off, a little bit off the line. Almost brings back memories of, like, Vrabel doing it in 05. I'm curious if you see similarities between the two players and their ability to sort of fill multiple roles for it when you need it.
Yeah, no, I think there's some similarities, yeah.
Anything, I mean, outside of the obvious of the position, I mean, anything else that stands out to you in terms of those similarities?
No, I mean, I think really you hit it. It's pretty obvious. I mean, they both played defensive end in college. They both played 3-4 outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme. They both played defensive end in a 4-man line. They both played off the line, either situationally or on need. You know, Jamie inactive last week, and, you know, when Landon went out, I mean, we're kind of a little bit short at that spot. You know, Mike did that. You know, where he played some inside line. Of course, we were playing out more 3-4 at that time. So, yeah, I mean, there. I think there's definitely some similarities. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of athletes that fall into that category. I mean, you could, you know, put McClellan in that category. He hasn't been here that long. I mean, not saying he, but you know, it's the same type of thing. He played inside linebacker at Chicago. He's played defensive end, really outside linebacker for us, what he did in college. So, I mean, you know, I think that's not an uncommon athlete or to see that move from those guys, you know, depending on what scheme and what the circumstances are of the team that they're in. Sorry.
You think Hightower can almost do the reverse, like where we see him more off the line if you ever wanted to play him?
Yeah, well, he did that. Yeah, so at Alabama, he played defensive end in their sub. You know, and they had, who did they have at that time? They had McLean and
Upshaw.
Well, Upshaw was an end. Yeah, well, he was 3-4 outside linebacker at the defensive end. So McLean was really the Mike, and Hightower was the on the line Sam to defensive end and sub. Then he injured his knee. Then the next year he came back. McLean was gone, and then he was the inside linebacker. So yeah, no, I think yeah, sure, he's in that same category.
I'm wondering if or what you've seen from Malcolm Butler as a tackler. He made a tackle last week on LaFell, I think it was, right short of the sticks early in the game. He's obviously not a huge guy, but just in terms of his, is it technique or instinct, what makes him effective as a tackler, even, you know, despite maybe his size at times?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is, you know, just the desire to tackle. And, you know, I think I've coached a lot of defensive backs and put Malcolm would go in this category of, you know, when a guy catches a pass on you, they really want to tackle him, you know, and tackle him hard. And, you know, I think you see that, you know, there's a certain type of defensive back, I think, that has that mentality. Like, you know, if they catch one, then, you know, I'm really going to try to tackle a guy as hard as I can, you know, because he caught one on me type of thing. So I think you see a lot of Malcolm's tackles, you know, like that. You know, tackling receivers is different than, you know, tackling running backs. And, you know, that's a challenge for, you know, for any defensive back, really, because the skill that those players have, you know, running the ball, and, you know, usually they can face up the defender. And so that's but, you know, John Jones is kind of like that, too. He's not the biggest guy, but kind of like Malcolm, he's, you know, tough and wants to tackle and, you know, knows how to use his size and his quickness, you know, usually to tackle low, but to be able to, you know, to, you know, to get those guys on the ground and wrap them up, you know. So I'd say a lot of it's desire, some of it's technique, you know, and then there's definitely an element of playing strength that comes in there, but desire is probably number one. Guys that really want to tackle, you know, are usually competitive tacklers. Guys that don't want to tackle aren't going to be good tacklers.
Just to follow up on Malcolm, the last time you guys played the Steelers, week one of last year, it was his first game as a starter, and I'm just wondering, I know that was a long time ago now, but are there things you know about him now that you didn't know about him going into that game?
No, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A year and a half later, I mean, you know, he's gained a lot of experience. He's done a lot of different things since then. We've, times we've matched, at times we haven't matched, times he's played inside in some sub situations. most of the time plays outside, but not exclusively. So we have zone calls, man calls. I mean, he's learned a lot and improved a lot in all those areas. So yeah, of course. I mean, it's come a long way in the last year and a half.
Does Bell's skill set remind you of anyone in particular?
He's really good. Yeah, he's really good. He's he can just do so many things. Very good in the passing game. Catches the ball. Good hands. He's got really good quickness. He plays strong. I know his weight's fluctuated a little bit. He was, I think, maybe in the 230s in college in Michigan State. I think he's a little looks lighter than that now, but he's got really good quickness. He can make guys miss in a short space. I mean, he doesn't need a lot of room. He can juke them in very little space. But he's got good power. He breaks tackles. Guys get on his legs and he just runs through them. So he's a really good player. He can do it all. However he gets the ball, he's really dangerous. Maybe one of the best backs we've played.
When you guys score a safety, how do you look at that in terms of, you don't just get the score, but getting possession back in terms of how quickly that can sort of change the complexion and the situation of the game?
Sure, yeah, it gives you a chance to kind of go on a run, which is hard to do in football. But that's how you do it, is scoring on defense or, creating really good field position, like, for example, in kickoff coverage. And then if you can get a stop and get the ball back, and then you have good field position or a turnover, so... you need something like that. You need a turnover, you need a safety, or you need a good field position play and a three and out, and to have that kind of field position to be able to string a couple scores together like that. So it's a great opportunity, defensively as a team, but set up by that defensive score, to try to go on a run and go from behind to ahead, or go from ahead to two or three scores ahead, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's unfortunately, we haven't had the kind of returns off the two safeties the last 2 weeks that would have really enhanced that. Getting the ball back's good. If we could have turned those returns into a little more production, that would have helped us. But it's a great opportunity, sure.
And if you look historically, whether it's games that you've been involved in, or whether it's been some big safeties in Super Bowls or other big games, are there good examples that you sort of have in your mind of that, when that's been a really pivotal play?
Well, I think when you look statistically, to me, I would kind of put that in the bonus points category. So, you go into a game and you think, all right, well, how many points are we going to score offensively? How many points are they going to score offensively? And that's, the way the game normally flows. When you get points from a defensive score, or points from a special team score, would be a block kick or a safety or a defensive return or something like that. I mean, you can't count on those points. You can't go into a game and think, all right, well, we're going to get 7 points on a defensive score. Over the course of the year, that maybe happens, 2-3 times a year, whatever it is. I mean, one team might have a bunch of them, like Alabama has this year, but that's unusual. I mean, just the normal team, the normal stats on it, you get, 2 or 3 of those a year, so you can't really count on those. So when you get those in a game, then that's pretty significant. And I think the overall statistical advantage to scoring a non-offensive touchdown, is pretty heavily, that team is going to win, more games. You put turnovers in there, you recover a fumble on a 1 yard line. It's not a defensive score, but if that ends up being a score, you have kind of a similar result. So those turnovers, that's why the turnovers are so important, is that they're not always point plays, but they usually result in points. Especially, if you get them in good field position, then you're already in the scoring zone. So, but safety is part of that. Yeah, it's definitely part of that conversation, because it's even though it's only 2 points. It is possession, so that's that. There's a little bit of an added benefit.
Mm-hmm. You'll indulge me. I want to ask a history question about Chuck Noll and what kind of interaction you might have had with him coming up to the coaching ranks. And obviously, he played for Paul Brown. I'm wondering if there's any similarities, any differences, and what kind of respect you have for Chuck Noll.
Yeah. you know, tremendous respect for Chuck Knoll, and certainly, you know, through the whole Paul Brown connection and all. You know, I talked to Chuck on a number of occasions, and I had a relationship with him. They didn't have much turnover in their staff, and so a lot of the coaches on their staff stay there for a long period of time. A couple of them I knew, you know, pretty well through my dad or other connections. Dan Radakovich was there for a long time. Raleigh Dotch was there for a long time, and I coached with Raleigh at Detroit. And so, you know, I would ask a lot of questions about the Pittsburgh system. You know, Bud Carson, you know, was another very influential coach there with the whole cover two. You know, he kind of brought the whole cover two scheme to the Steelers. You know, and the way they played it and the way they read it, and that was, you know, I mean, obviously a great defense, but, you know, the techniques and all and the reads that they used in that defense under Coach Knoll were, you know, pretty innovative. And so I learned a lot about that through Coach Glanville, who worked with Coach Carson at Georgia Tech. So, you know, I felt like I had a lot of connections to Pittsburgh, but obviously never worked in Pittsburgh, never worked directly in that system. But, you know, through some of those other coaches, I learned, you know, as much about it as I could. Of course, when I went to Cleveland, Coach Knoll was there. That was his last year. Actually, that was his last game when we played him in 91. Then Coach Cowher took over after that. So, great respect for Coach Knoll. He was a very intelligent guy. You know, he had a great way of mixing football with life. You know, football was important. Football was, you know, not trying to make it insignificant, but, you know, he had a lot of other interests, and he was very, you know, very diverse, you know, had a lot of diverse interests as well. Very good fundamental coach. The trapping scheme that they ran on offense was very innovative. You know, Coach Landry had some of that in Dallas, but certainly not to the extent that Pittsburgh had it. When I was with the Giants, we always played the Steelers in preseason every year, the Rooney-Mara family relationship. We always played them. And so that was always a great preseason game for us because you could really kind of measure your team. Even though it was a preseason game, it was usually the third game. You know, usually the starters played in the third quarter, and it was a very competitive game. It kind of gave you a good sense of where your team was going up against a physical, well-coached, tough football team, especially if it was on the road in Pittsburgh, you know, where you have to, you know, deal with the being on the road and the fans and so forth. So I've learned a lot from competing against the Steelers, going back to Coach Knoll and then, you know, Coach Cowher. And I've learned a lot because they've been so consistent. They've stayed very much the same. I mean, you know, three coaches in the last, I don't know, whatever, 40 years or however long it's been, you know, it's a long time. Because of their consistency, I've learned a lot from studying that organization, and you know, I think Coach Knoll was just, you know, did a tremendous job. He had great stability, very good fundamental coach. He believed in what he believed in, and they got good at it, and they always had tough, physical, hard-nosed, smart football players. The receivers blocked. The offensive line was tough. Defensively, they always tackled well. You know, they played good fundamentals. They were just very, very well coached. And all the people that have gone, you know, that I've talked to that have gone through there, coach on his staff and everything, they you know, affirmed that with, you know, his, you know, with their recollections of it. And then, so I never worked with Knoll, and I never worked with Landry, but in 1977, when I was with the Lions, Ed Hughes was our offensive coordinator, and he had been with Landry for, I don't know, 20 years or 15 years, whatever it was. So he kind of brought the Dallas system, and we ran that in 77 in Detroit. And so I learned a lot about the Cowboys system, you know, because, again, nobody left the Cowboys. You know, there wasn't much turnover on that staff, so learned about the Steelers from, you know, Coach Dotch and Coach Radakovich and, you know, Jerry through Bud Carson and so forth. And then the Dallas system through Coach Hughes from Landry was all – they were very impactful, I would say, learning – part of the learning tree in the early part of my career that, even though I wasn't with those coaches, I felt like I learned a lot about their programs and what they did through people that were very closely in that program.
Let's take two more.
You broke into the league right around the time that the Steelers were starting their dynasty there with the, you know, the handful of Super Bowls.
So just on that note, so in 75, you know, with the Colts, we start out 1-4. And we won the last nine games to go 10-4 and win the division. I mean, it was, you know, a tremendous turnaround. And then we went to Pittsburgh, you know, for the playoffs. And, you know, they had a great team. And we really, you know, really had a chance in that game. It's like 17-13, I think it was, in the fourth quarter. And we drive down. We're on the, like, 5-6 yard line, whatever it was, and intercept and run back for a touchdown. So instead of going ahead, you know, now we're down by two scores, and, you know, we end up getting beat. But, you know, from my first year in the league, the point being from my first year in the league, you know, just seeing how good they were. I mean, they were so good on defense. I mean, every guy was, like, better than the next guy. And from Green to Lambert to, like, that whole front four and then the secondary, you know, and offensively. And then the Giants going against them every year. I mean, literally we played them every year in preseason, plus, you know, a couple random games here and there in the regular season. Like, they were very, you know, when you're a young coach and you're looking at, okay, who does things, you know, in a way that you admire, respect, or want to emulate, or what can you take from a good program to help you as a coach, or, you know, if you ever get a chance, you know, what would you do that they do? Like, they were one of those teams. So, not to cut you off on the question, but, yeah, from the first year, the Steelers, you know, had a very, very strong impact on, from the outside, on, you know, my philosophy as a coach.
I was just curious, and that was good insight, but what was it like trying to game plan for those guys that, you know, in that given week when you got a chance to play against them? Because, you know, you mentioned the amount of talent they had, especially defensively.
Yeah, well, I was on the defensive side of the ball, so we were, you know, it was Swan, Stallworth, you know, Harris, Blyer, Bradshaw. I mean, it was, you know, Webster. I mean, you know, right down the line. It's, I mean, you know, one Hall of Fame guy after another, one All Pro guy after another. It was a, you know, very, very solid team. But again, I would say from going against them in 75 to going against them in the 80s or even into 91 when I was in Cleveland, not a lot changed. I mean, they had a very, you know, consistent philosophy of what they did. They drafted players into it. Of course, that was all before free agency, so they kept their players. They built them up in the system. They had a very good training program. That was another thing that was impressive about the Steelers and Coach Knoll was in terms of the off-season program and player development and, you know, how strong physically their players were, that was uncommon at that point in time, I would say. I mean, you know, I went to the Colts. We didn't even have a weight room. We didn't have a weight coach either. But, I mean, there was no weight room. There was a little universal gym that had, you know, four or five stations on that one, and that was it. I mean, you could have put the weight room in a corner there. That was it. But that wasn't like that in Pittsburgh. And then when I went to Detroit, you know, we had a much – it was a legitimate weight room. It was a legitimate weight program, probably similar to what the Steelers had. But, you know, trying to kind of keep up with that. Floyd Reese was a strength coach. And so then I saw, like, the difference between no weight program and – you know, a weight training off-season conditioning program. But that was all, of course, you know, predated by what the Steelers were doing. So, again, there was a lot of things like that that they did that I would say were, you know, definitely on the forefront, but they did a great job of developing younger players, bringing them up through the system, you know, guys that might not play for, you know, years one, two, three, whatever it was, but then they get in there, and then they're pretty good, you know. And so they develop players, and well, they had a very, very well-balanced team. So that was another thing about them, too. You know, what didn't matter. It was offense, defense, special teams. I mean, they're just good at everything. You know, it's like, well, they're pretty good here, but we can take advantage of them there. Yeah, there wasn't really much of that.
Take one more. Just to shift forward, I'm curious. You know, we hear a lot, nothing's more important than the health of the players. And I'm just curious, knowing what we know now, if there's any feeling of being extra fortunate just that you have one available this week based on anything, you know, you saw on film at the end of that game last week?
I mean, look, it's a tough game. Guys get banged up every week. You know, we would come in there on Monday, and, you know, there's a lot of guys in there getting treatment, and they're competitive. They work hard during the week to be out there, and then they're out there the following week. I mean, I'm sure every team in the league has that. So, Again, we're fortunate. We have a very competitive group of players. They want to play. They, you know, they want to do the extra things that they need to do to play, rest, recovery, you know, extra treatment, so forth. You know, we have staff that, you know, cares, you know, and a big staff that, you know, cares for the players. And so, you know, sometimes they make it, sometimes they don't. But, I mean, I respect how hard they try, you know, to practice, you know, to be out there every day, to get the timing that they need and to whatever extent they can do that, and then, you know, to play in the game. So sometimes it's less practice, but still being able to play. Sometimes they're limited in practice, but at least they're still out there trying to get as much timing and repetition with their teammates as possible. So I think you got to give the players a lot of credit on that. You know, and the staff certainly, you know, does a great job in trying to, you know, do what they can do. But, again, the players really got to want to, you know, put in that extra time, that extra work, and, you know, to be out there. So, yeah, of course, it's critical. I'll take a couple more if you want. I mean, I know I had a couple long answers there. It's, you know, it's usually a problem with me, just going on and on and on.
You mentioned Jerron's smarts on one of the conference calls this week, and Eric Rowe specifically mentioned him as a guy who's really helped him out since he came to the program. When did you start to see him kind of emerge as a leader, and what allows him to be that kind of, I guess, approachable leader for young guys on this team?
Yeah, Jerron's, I'd say every, you know, every team, or most every team I've ever coached, there's always a couple guys on the team that I would say are, for lack of a better word, they're silent leaders. They have leadership, but it kind of comes out in a little bit of a different way than Junior Seau or Teddy Bruschi or somebody like that. And again, not saying one's better than the other. They're just different. And I would put Deron kind of in the silent leader category. But I would say, and Bill Russell taught me this, that in a way, a silent leader in some respects is more powerful than a more vocal leader, because, you know, you hear the vocal guy, you see him, you know, you're very aware of it. But then there are guys that give you that quiet leadership that, in a way, is more powerful because it's not quite out there as much, but it's, you know, it's that quiet push that, you know, sometimes can maybe have a little more impetus. So kind of put Deron into that category. And first of all, he's very well respected. He's smart. He works hard. He studies. He trains hard. You know, I'll go even back to his first year. He and Logan Ryan, you know, the day after the season, they're in here, you know, working out, doing extra stuff in the weight room, you know, here working out in January, you know, things like that. Just not like, hey, coach, I'm here. Make sure, you know, make sure you know I'm here. I'm, you know, putting in extra time. They would do it just to do it, you know. Studies the game well, smart, obviously came up in a great system with Coach Ciano and was very well schooled. And so when he got here, he was already, you know, used to preparation, understood a lot of the finer points of the passing game. And again, I think he understands, and really anybody who plays in a secondary, and I've coached that position a lot of my career, you understand how interdependent you are on everybody else, kind of like the offensive line. Like, even if one guy does the right thing, if somebody else doesn't, then it's a problem for all of us. So getting everybody on the same page, communication, making sure that, you know where your help is, where I'm going to be. You know, I know where you're going to be, so we can work together with each other. Like, Deron's very good at those kind of things, and also dependable, where if he says he's there, he's going to be there. You know, some guys are, they're not always where they need to be, and so then you never really know for sure, you know, do I have it, do I not have it? I know I'm supposed to have it, but can I trust it? Like, you can always, you know, trust it with Deron, so... You know, I think you build that up through time, through repetition, through, you know, you earn that trust on the practice field, you earn that trust on the game field by doing it dependably over and over and over and over again, and he does that. He's there every day, very consistent, very dependable. And so when he speaks, then, you know, I think that's where the leadership comes from, is it's, there's a trust. Like, you know, if he says something, you can count on it. He'll be there, he'll come through, and he'll deliver it. And, it's kind of interesting, you know, like I said, every team has, you know, guys like that on it. And, you know, some more vocal than others, but some of those quiet leaders are, you know, have a lot of power and a lot of influence that's just a little less noticeable, but, you know, very impactful. That's a great question.
When did you meet Bill Russell?
Bill came here in 2002, maybe. We've spoken, you know, a few times. In fact, I saw Bill at the last year at the playoff games, the playoffs in, with the Celtics.
Bill, I want to ask about Elan Roberts. When you were scouting him, he went from 17 tackles as a junior to leading the country as a senior. How rare is like a surge like that? And when you only have a player who has 1 year of college production, what goes into kind of scouting that player?
Yeah. That's a great question. That's a tough one. You're like, if this guy's so good, why did he not play? You know, why wasn't he out there? And so that 1 year of production, regardless of how the Gronkowski, same thing, you know, 1 year of production, Ninkovich, 1 year of production. Rob was the same thing. Rob didn't play at, Purdue. And then when, what's his name? Edwards got suspended. Then he played first half of the season. Edwards was out like four games, five games, whatever it was. Rob played. Rob had, you know, a bunch of production, and then, you know, got drafted in the fourth round. And Landon, you know, kind of the same thing. You know, got into the starting lineup, played, was very productive. So it's a great question. It's like, is that production circumstantial? Is that production real? Is this guy really on the way up, or was that the peak? And then, you know, is it going to come back down? I guess the one that sticks out the most for me is would be Coach Saban's story about Lambert, you know, when he was at Kent State speaking to the Steelers. You know, how Lambert, you know, couldn't get on the field. He was a backup linebacker and didn't play. And the kid in front of him, you know, was really their leader. He was the, you know, kind of heart and soul of the Kent State defense. Nick was played quarterback on that team. And through a series of circumstances, that's another long story, but we'll skip through all that. Anyway, the kid, you know, dropped out of school, went to work for Mick Jagger. He was his security guy for on tour with the Stones. And Lambert became the starting middle linebacker. And he probably would have never played had that not happened. And, you know, you have a Hall of Fame player. So it's, you know, sometimes things take a turn. And then once some players get that opportunity and they get in there, you know, the Tom Brady's of the world or whoever, you know, you can't get them out of there. You know, Lou Gehrig. I mean, sometimes it just, you know. So is it that one or is it the other one of, okay, well, that was the high water mark, and then, you know, it never gets close to that point again. So it's really a tough question. Obviously, the more you have to go on, probably the better chance you have of making the right evaluation. The less you have to go on, the more it's, you know, is this a one-year flash or, you know, is this the start of something, you know, that's going to be at that level you saw for that short amount of time. And there's certainly a lot of examples of both. But Ninkovich, it's the same thing. It's a very, I mean, forget about him being at Miami and New Orleans and all that, but just his college career, you know, didn't play until his senior year. The only reason he played his senior year is because the kid ahead of him got suspended. And then once he played, then you're like, this guy's pretty good, you know. So, but Landon had tremendous production last year. Yeah, tremendous production. And I'd say that some about his production, you know, some guys make a lot of tackles. You know, a lot of them are downfield or, you know, after 4 or 5 yard gains and that kind of thing. Landon had a lot of plays that were, you know, not always tackle for losses, but, you know, they were plays on the line of scrimmage as opposed to, you know, dragging a guy down after he's gained 6 yards. You know, there's a kind of difference in those type of tackles, that kind of production.
Extending the play.
Extending. This was an extending the play. Yeah, a little scramble. All right, we good? Okay, all right, thank you. All right.
Thank you very much. Yep.